This is Mental Selling. This is the sales podcast for people that are dedicated to making a difference in customers' lives and have a purpose beyond just a paycheck. I'm your host, Will Milano. Let's get right into the show. How do you move from a culture of doing to a culture of learning that not only benefits employees, but creates the impact that your customers will see and feel? Is the driving force behind your organization simply to make and sell products, or are your people and their development really the catalysts to your success that you claim it to be? Katie Anderson is an internationally recognized leadership coach, consultant, speaker, and learning enthusiast, best known for inspiring leaders to lead with intention to increase their impact. And she's author of the best-selling book, Learning to Lead, Leading to Learn. She joins me today on Mental Selling, your favorite sales podcast. Katie, thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to join us today.
Thanks for having me, Will. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Absolutely. I want to start by reading a statement that you've made that I'd like to unpack a bit. You've said, quote, "The purpose of organizations is not to make a product or deliver a service that your customers value. The organization's purpose is to develop people so that they can deliver on the product or service." Can you talk about that?
Yes. Through my career in working with organizations who have really been successful in delivering excellent products and services, comes down to their ability, first and foremost, to focus on people and their people's learning. So it's not that there isn't a focus on customers. Actually, having a strong customer focus is an enabler and essential to that. But organizations like Toyota, who I've had an opportunity to study deeply for my time living in Japan and working with the subject of my book, Learning to Lead, Leading to Learn, it's this focus on people as the enabler. And often I see that we have it backwards in sort of Western cultures. We're so focused on the outcomes that we want, the results that we want, and see people as a nice to have or a secondary thing. And successful companies who really do this well focus on the people first and see that as their primary focus and their primary purpose. And their secondary purpose, which they need to do to stay in business, of course, is delivering the products and services that their customers need and value.
But without focusing on their people first, their customers are going to...
There won't be anything for their customers.
They can't have those amazing experience or have those products and services delivered the way they want them to be.
Toyota has this motto that says, "We make people so that we can make cars." And so like they focus on the people development first, and that's the primary. And then the secondary purpose is the product that they can make.
Exactly. And I think more companies want to have that perspective, but they have a hard time putting it into practice, putting sort of their money where their mouth is. In that regards, so many organizations, they use training and development of their people as a check the box activity at an annual company meeting or kickoff meeting or new hire training, whatever the case may be. How do organizations go from using training and development as a check the box activity to a culture of learning, like you're talking about, with intention and a culture of learning that's aligned with the company's purpose?
The training and going to a conference, those are great opportunities to be introduced to a concept to help shift awareness or introduce a practice, but it really doesn't get embedded into real capability except through that practice and ongoing coaching and support. And so where organizations who've been able to more successfully move to this more people-centered learning focus is shifting from seeing, as you said, training or learning being a check the box, you attended a class or a course activity. I almost call that offline learning, which is important. But how does learning get integrated into the process of doing the work? So into the process of achieving the goals or the outcomes that we need. And so that leaders shift into a mindset of more coaching and development as well as a key part of their role. Or learning's not add-on that we do, but it's integrated. It's how we actually go through the process of getting to the results that we need. But that also requires we need to build in time for that. And we also need to up-level managers and leaders' capabilities to be effective in doing that.
That sustainment over time. And like you said, the leaders, the managers' capabilities, because training should be about behavior change. And that doesn't happen in the classroom when somebody's gone through a 2 or 4 or 8 hour training, whatever the case may be. that happens, as you were saying, like through repetition, reinforcement, manager feedback, and building that confidence over time. What are some ways that learning should be structured to align with that?
One thing that I've discovered, and this is a simple way to break down learning, because I do a lot of training and development as part of my role as a leadership coach and consultant, is breaking down training to be a discrete topic and then with practice and reflection. You can take that same model into your daily work too. So what's a concept that you're trying to teach someone? And then how do they have space and time for practicing that? And practicing ideally with a coach or, you know, their manager, giving that daily feedback and also some reflection time. And then coming back and building on that, as so you're starting to build capability as people get confidence in a skill. If you think about learning a new sport or a musical instrument, we can understand that from our experiences of that. You can't be exposed to a concept and think you're going to be great. You have to have the practice and the failures and the struggle of discomfort of not feeling perfect. Because to learn something new, we inherently don't have the true capability of doing something. So we have to just get okay with that. So the more we can break down the learning process into sort of, I don't know if the chunks is the word, but steps where there's then practice and feedback and learning that happens along the way is the most effective, including when you're trying to deliver a training, quote unquote, program. How do you not just have it be built in the old model where it's like a 2-day class and then you go home? But how do you break those concepts where there's more follow-up, more reflection, and more practice?
And something you talked about that I was going to get to next, so let's talk about it now, which is around failure. And a lot of what we're talking about is providing that space for people to come up with their own ideas, because great learning is not telling people what to do, but giving them the confidence and the tools to come up with their own answers. And part of that, as you said, is giving them the space to fail. It's hard sometimes for sales leaders and sales organizations to give salespeople the freedom to fail and stumble and not just jump in and do it for them for the sake of closing the deal. So how do you justify that or decouple those things?
It's a hard thing for us as humans. One, because we also just inherently don't like to see people struggle or fail. So we have this sort of natural desire to want to help someone. If we're tasked to achieving a certain outcome, that might be hard too. So we have to make intentional trade-offs on, is this a really critical situation that where failure is really not an option? Certainly anything that's safety or quality, that's a no-brainer. But even if really in closing a super important deal is important, there may be time for someone to step in and not allow the deal to fail with the client, because that's also not doing by the client. But how does that become a teachable moment? It's doing what I call navigating these leadership continuums and knowing that what's the difference between taking over and doing it versus having a learning moment as well. There is some difference in there and some intentional trade-offs we have to make.
And part of that's viewing learning. And again, this can be context of sales, like we talk about, but in any case, in organizations, but talking about learning in context of collective progress from the group versus just the individual, that focus on team success and teams moving forward with step change and behavior change, not just the individual.
Absolutely. And going back to the example you had, for that leader to think about what are some opportunities where it's not a huge deal if this one fails. So a place where people can practice. This is why we have sports teams practice off the field. Where are those places where failure is more okay? It's not that we want negative outcomes, and that's not what failure means. It just means we didn't hit the goal that time, and how is it a learning outcome? But if it's a critical must-do, can't-fail situation, you're going to put people who are more experienced in the game at that point, versus it's pretty clear it's an okay to have some more failure points or some mistakes and stumbles and fumbles along the way. You might see that as more of a learning opportunity for other people. So that's your role as the leader or the coach in this situation, is knowing when are those learning opportunities.
So you wrote a really interesting piece. It was in Industry Week, which was, I think, the reason that I first reached out to you about being on this show, because I read the article. And that piece said, in part, the art of unburdened leadership comes when leaders empower their teams to take ownership of achieving a goal, and the support and space to learn how to get there. That sort of relates to part of what we're talking about, which is give people more of the motivation and confidence behind the why they're doing and not jumping in with the nuts and bolts of the how.
You know, the art of unburdened leadership is that an unintended consequence of us jumping in and taking over the doing or giving someone all of our ideas or telling them exactly what to do is that we actually take on the ownership or the responsibility for that problem or that situation. And so we're like adding to our backpack, to our burden, all the things that we have to get done or the team has to get done. We're taking on that responsibility. And that then creates this vicious cycle where we don't feel like we have time to coach and develop people and to give them space because we have so much stuff to get done. And so how do we start to develop people and create their own capability to move towards success in a certain situation so that we are unburdening ourselves with all the doing? And then our role becomes much more at a higher level, a strategic goal. What are the big things that we need to accomplish? And then how are we creating the systems and the space for people to learn and develop and to be successful?
And part of the learning and development has to focus on the managers and helping them understand things like how to coach too. Because we hear that a lot where especially sales leaders, they will notoriously say, I don't have time for coaching, right? And what they're really often saying is they don't have the tools or confidence themselves, or they have a bit of maybe imposter syndrome for coaching other people. And I was thinking back to somebody that I interviewed on this podcast very early on. He was the second or third person I interviewed. And he said, leaders will talk a lot about, I'm constantly having to put out fires. And he said, the thing they don't realize is that coaching is fire prevention.
Totally. I heard two things in your comment there. The one, I don't have time. And so that gets back into this unburdened leadership. Part of the reason you don't have time is you are taking on all of the doing. But if your team was more capable, you actually would have time. And so digging yourself into a hole. And the other is around people not having the skills or the capabilities themselves on how to coach and how to do that. And we actually do a real disservice in most of our organizations. I have to say that I've either been in as an internal person or been coaching, consulting to, in really developing management and leadership capabilities. We take high performing individual contributors, someone who had good results in their field, whatever it may be. So like maybe a great salesperson, and then put them in charge of managing a team, but don't give them any skills around or development around what that means. It's not fair. You're not setting them up for success and being able to really fulfill that role capably. There needs to be a different level of coaching and management as well there.
Yeah, that happens all the time in sales organizations. The knee jerk is look at the spreadsheet and who's the top performer, one of the top two performers, and he or she must make the next great sales leader, right? Such a different job that part of it is the organization has to prepare that person adequately for it. And part of it is the person taking on that role has to accept that their job is would be drastically different if they moved up.
How we started the show is talking about the purpose is not just to deliver the product or service or the outcome, right? It's to develop people. And so it's shifting a mindset that then the top priority be in the purpose is, of course, to get that outcome. When we focus as on the outcome as the singular, the most important thing, and that secondary is, oh, maybe I can coach and develop my people, but that's a secondary. We're less likely to be able to move successfully towards that goal. But if we can see our leadership purpose is not just to deliver the outcome or result, but a key part of our role is to develop people's capabilities, that can also shift our mindset about what we're supposed to be doing and where we should be spending our time.
Yeah, because part of the learning culture has to be not talking about going beyond results and getting beneath the surface to sort of how are you getting to those results as an organization? Because if you're burning the house down and burning relationships and burning people out, all those things along the way, but you're reaching your organization goals, you're not really successful then, are you? Because what's the collateral damage of that along the way?
Absolutely. And how likely are you going to have retention of your employees? We know that our employee satisfaction and happiness is really tied to the experience of our customers if we're in a service organization. And being so singularly focused on the outcome without looking, as you said, at the process or the people is really in the long run not going to serve us.
In your words, leaders need to be macro managers, not micromanagers. Let's talk about what that looks like and also why you think so many managers struggle with that.
I was actually working on expanding on an article that to write about around this difference between macro management and micromanagement. So we all have this experience, like we've all had a micromanager, like one someone who's like checking on you all the time and actually like jumping in and doing the work. And how does it feel? Terrible.
It conveys a lack of trust.
Well, it's a lack of trust. My experience is a lot of this lack of trust is because we don't have clarity on purpose. And we also don't have the systems and structures in place to have visibility of what's going on. Sometimes there's this lack of trust because we don't know what's happening. And so then we get anxious. If we can create more like visibility to the work process, regular check-ins, or we know that there is a reliable system in place that someone's going to tell us accurately, are things on track or off track, raise the flag if they need help or if things are going off course, then we can trust that the process is actually running and that people are doing better. So the difference between the micromanagement where managers are coming in and looking at all the minutiae all the time, which actually isn't their role, how do they create the trust in the systems? And then shift to be more of what I call this macro manager. And that goes along with what I describe in my book, Learning to Lead, Leading to Learn, is that a leader's role is to set a clear direction. So what's the goal or the challenge we need to achieve? And then create the systems and structures that enable and provide support to people to achieve it. The leader's role is to look at the bigger picture and then provide the support to their people to get there. But the micromanagers are jumping into not just providing the support, but getting into all of the minutiae. And then you're not creating that trust and ultimately burdening yourself again with the doing again.
And that's part of this culture of learning in an organization. I equate it to the leader should be helping to make sure the compass is pointed in the right direction. But the how the person gets from A to B has to be up to them.
Within some guidelines. And that's part of your role as leader and within the boundaries. But yes, allowing them to discover the route there. And maybe their route is better than the route you thought of or had done before.
And part of the issue of micromanaging is it becomes not subtly or not so subtly conveys a lack of trust, but it's incredibly energy draining for the person, right? What are some of the other things that can most drain someone's energy and potential?
Well, certainly we create this learned helplessness in organizations when we don't give people the real genuine space or opportunity to bring forward their ideas or ask for them, but we're not really asking for them. So like you do nothing with those ideas. And so there's nothing more like disengaging and energy draining than having just your contributions don't really matter. Why should I even try to contribute to an idea or solve some problems or take some responsibility when you're not really going to give me the opportunity to take some true responsibility to take some action? And maybe my idea is wrong, but making sure that's okay.
Another thing that I thought was interesting that you write about is the importance of slowing down and pausing and getting comfortable with silence. That can be in the context of learning, in the context of selling as well. It's important because getting comfortable with silence after asking questions, what does that do for us in the context of better serving customers and for ongoing learning, things like that?
We are terrible. I put my hand up there too with pausing. We are so much in a habit and a culture of doing and filling any space, any silence with our thinking. So we get very uncomfortable if you ask a question and within like 1 second, someone hasn't said something. Oh, well, they must not have the answer. I'm just going to jump in and give them all my ideas or tell them what to do. Like how often have you had someone say, so are there any questions? Okay, great. None. Let's go on. And like, whoa, like the person hasn't even processed your question yet. It's disingenuous. It's amazing when I work with leaders at all levels of organizations, the two things that tend to be the most challenging, one is realizing how much they have a telling habit, telling instead of asking. But then people come back and they're like, man, you asked me to count to 10 after asking a question. And that was so hard. It feels like an eternity. But you know what? People were coming in with better ideas and I could tell they were more engaged. And, you know, so it's like we are uncomfortable with this space, but it actually results in more thinking and more engagement.
It's a confidence booster as well, because that conveys that you're genuinely interested in what that person might have a reflection about. Or if you're doing it in a sales context, you're genuinely interested in what the customer has to say. You're not asking the question to check a box and just move on to your next question.
Absolutely. And so make sure you're asking an open-ended question, not a closed-ended question, because that actually invites more richness of thinking and response. And then my coach and mentor helped me do years ago which is label what I'm doing. So it might feel uncomfortable, but to even say to people, I really want to hear what you're saying. So I'm going to have an intentional pause after my questions because I really want to give you time to think and respond or ask another question. Because it does feel weird sometimes, but then people know what your purpose, what your intention is. That you're not like being all strange, but there's a reason behind it and it's a good reason.
And it's also giving permission for the response from that person to be, I'm not really sure. I'd have to think about that and get back to you. That's an okay response too.
It's unlikely actually that we know all the answers in the moment. If it's a complex problem that we've been trying to figure out, it's unlikely that we just with one or two questions, it's like, oh, now I can answer everything. Sometimes the best question is, wow, that is helping me think about something differently. I need some time to think about that or to go explore some more information. And yes, the pause too. We get in this like reactive mode of doing, running from meeting to meeting to meeting. And then in this reactive mode, we are, well, reactive. And so we end up doing more telling, shutting people down, feeling like I don't have time to listen. And so if we can even just take these, like what I call these 10-second intention pauses throughout the day to really remind ourselves of, God, what is the impact I want to have with my behavior? How am I going to show up in this upcoming meeting? Or you're going into a sales call or sales meeting. I really want to ask open-ended questions and I want to slow down and give that pause. It helps us stay grounded in that impact that we want to have. So that pause and that slowing down helps us be proactive and not reactive.
I heard someone say that there's a reason in sports that coaches use timeouts. And it's not always just to stop the clock. It's often just to get people to pause and take a breath and like, all right, let's see where we are, that sort of thing, and give that space in what can be heated moments. I want to go back to something we talked a little bit about before, and it's the idea of the difficult road that individual contributors, especially in sales, face when they're facing being elevated into leadership roles. And we talked about how often the organization, they do a poor job of identifying the right people. And sometimes the salesperson is taking on a role thinking that they're supposed to do that and not necessarily being intentional about wanting that as a next step in their career. And you said that behaviors that executives and new managers have been taught to define leadership success are not what will actually deliver successful outcomes they desire. Can you talk about that and how difference between skills that you hone as an individual contributor for years and how sometimes those can actually get in the way of their success and the organization's success once they're put into a leadership role?
This starts at an early age for us. So in school, we are rewarded for who has puts their hand up, who has the answer. That was what we're rewarded for. And even into early careers as independent contributors or while we're developing sort of deep content knowledge or expertise, when we're the doer, the person responsible for achieving a result or making progress on a project or an initiative, we're supposed to be the ones there diving into it and doing the doing. When we move into a people development role, and this could be either as a manager or a senior leader, or if you are in a role that's more like a people development, a role called coach, you might be your continuous improvement practitioner, your role is not just about you doing the outcome. It's about helping other people do the outcome so that your doing is to understand, if you're a leader or manager, what are the goals of the group or the organization? How is that aligning with what the organization needs to do? You have to figure out, when are you showing up with your content knowledge, your expertise, and on more strategic problems, and that you're being granted the doing ownership? And then when are you the one who's more in a coaching role or a people development role, and you're purpose in that, it's not about you coming up with the answer. It's about helping somebody else come up with an answer. It's a shift because it's not that we need to give up all expertise that we've developed in a certain field or discipline. It's just that not all the work is about us doing the work. It's sometimes about teaching and guiding people to do the work and develop the capabilities so that we can be growing the organization. You're now looking at different levels. And that's where you should be focusing your time and your expertise.
Where you can see commonalities and trends and ways for this person or this group to help that group or what's emerging, all those sorts of things, which is really where the focus should be.
And not everyone wants to be a manager or should be a manager. Some people like really love the doing and are great at it. And let's put those people into more like those high powered, that's the deal that has to be closed. You want your best salesperson in there. And your best salesperson might not be your best team leader. it's okay, but have different tracks for that as well in organizations. That makes it okay for people to make a different choice that's also rewarded as career progression.
Yeah, and that's part of the culture of learning, right, that you're talking about, is making space for that to be okay, that you can continue to develop your career while you're still in an individual contributor role and you're contributing so much more to the collective success of everybody around you. What's your advice for practicing routine personal development with structure? You talk about that a lot. Personal development with structure for continuous improvement.
Essence of this is about identifying an opportunity for growth that you want to have in yourself, sort of that continuous improvement, or continuing to hone a skill that you already have or something that you're good at and taking it to the next level, and setting an intention. What are you going to practice? And then doing daily reflection on that. How did I do today? I was just in an event hosted by General Electric GE about how do you create a continuous improvement mindset across an organization. And all the different speakers were talking about this. And we had some professional athletes there too. And we had Wolfgang Puck and some other, there's people from all different disciplines. They all talked, and particularly the athletes, about this daily intentional reflection and adjustment. And so that's what the routine practice for continuous improvement is like. What did I plan to do? How did it actually go? What did I learn from that? And what am I going to be doing differently next time? And it's okay to fail and not do things perfectly. But setting that as like a constant structure for yourself will really accelerate your performance.
To make space for that, like you said, you've got to get out of that doer mode where you're constantly just going from thing to thing, meeting to meeting, customer conversation to customer conversation. And yeah, doing that reflection on what went well, what can I do better, start, stop, continue, all that sort of stuff, right?
It's hard. It's a challenge for me too. So it's like, how do I create the structure to make sure that it happens? Because if I don't block time for it, it's all the other doing fills it up. And so we see reflection in that learning moment often not as productive as the doing. But if we just keep doing and we're not learning, adjusting to get better, we're just going to keep repeating the same thing. And maybe we'll be having success at times, but we're not really getting better. And there's something inherent about us with all wanting to like continue to make a positive impact and do something a little bit better and achieve more.
That's how you continually build confidence and maintain your energy and all those things, right? So you wrote an article for Forbes recently, I think. It was specifically focused around advice for finding a coach. But when I read it, I thought it was also really applicable for how sales leaders could better think about and frame coaching conversations. And even a salesperson could frame what they want to get out of a coaching conversation. And you said in the piece, quote, "What's your greatest challenge that you want clarity on, and what's currently holding you back?" And answering that helps to clarify what they want to focus on in the coaching and identify their current behaviors. I thought that was really good. Could you expand on that a bit?
Before I answer, I'm going to ask you another question. What really resonated with that coaching advice to you, Will?
For me, it was the responsibility of preparation ahead of time and putting the onus from a leadership standpoint, not on this is what I want to convey and communicate, but asking what's important to that person.
This is one coaching thing I always ask people to do too. If someone brings something forward that either a question or something that they found interesting, ask another question because you learn more about how you might respond or what was driving that question. I want to continue on that. We want to create ownership for people and their improvement. And what I want to teach you as a coach may not be what you want to focus on. If you are in a leadership role, there are some specifics different. There are sometimes that management element, well, someone needs to improve a certain thing, and that you can be a little more directive on that. But also extracting from people what's holding them back or what is the thing that they want to achieve helps create that ownership and buy-in. And then we'll also build the rapport and the relationship with you as the coach and the learner as well.
A lot of what we talk about around coaching is it reflects directly on what you said in that Forbes piece, which is coaching should focus on what's holding people back and that these self-imposed barriers, limits, self-limiting beliefs, that's really sort of the crux of what coaching should focus on. Coaching is not sort of like, let's go through your numbers and your to-do list and what are your priorities for the next week. It's really got to be that deeper stuff that gets to the heart of what's in their gut.
Absolutely. I mean, the other one is more of the management side. Did you do these things? Are you on track or not track? The coaching is how are you developing the skills, the capability, the confidence, the progress, the growth to achieve those things. The other part is, okay, maybe you start off like you aren't meeting your numbers. Let's dig into what's going on. What challenges are you having? Maybe I can go with you and observe one of your sales calls, and then we can have a debrief about it. The problem might be exhibited by they're not meeting a certain goal, but let's understand the process and what's going on for the person.
Not meeting that goal or not doing certain levels of activity. We'll say that's not the problem. That's the symptom of the problem. Like you said, there's managing and there's coaching, both very important, but separate. But if all you're doing is saying like, you're having 4 customer meetings a week, I want you to have 7. What does that do for the person, really? That's all fine and good to say, but how are they going to actually get there? What's holding them back from doing that?
Or here's the challenge that I'm setting for you. You need to have 7. Today, it's, you know, you're having 4. In the next month, you need to be having 7. So your gap is 3. So let's break it down. What's your process to get those meetings? How are you thinking about that? What are your challenges? What's helped you get the meetings in the past? So it's okay to set those goals and those targets. And that's the leader's role of what setting direction, setting a clear target. But the providing the support is that coaching element. So how are you going to get there? And some people are more beginners, like they don't know how to get there. And other people who are like, oh yeah, I got this. I'm going to nail that. Like I just didn't realize I needed a higher goal. Every person's going to be different in the reasons and the pathway to get there. And so you need to provide different levels of support based on that individual.
And that's another important piece is that idea that whether it's training and development or coaching people, everybody has different degrees of experience, either in their career or tenure within the organization. And what that person needs is always going to be different. And you've got to be able to customize it, right? So Katie, thank you. This has been a really good conversation. I know we're out of time for today, but I think this has been really helpful, especially for anybody that's listening, that's in a sales or sales leader role, or the learning and development people that are supporting those organizations to create what we're talking about around this culture of learning and not just getting out of just the doing all day. So thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks, Will. Thanks for having me. If anyone wants to learn more, you can reach me at kbjanderson.com. And I have a new podcast coming out myself called Chain of Learning. So you can go over to chainoflearning.com and learn more there about when it's coming out later this year.
Also, again, Katie's book is called Learning to Lead, Leading to Learn. You'll find it basically everywhere. You can also find and follow Katie on LinkedIn, on Twitter at KBJ Anderson. And you already mentioned your website. I encourage everybody to follow you and learn quite a bit more about a lot of the things that we're talking about. Thanks to all of you for listening, as always, from wherever and whenever you might be hearing this. Thank you for joining us. Please, if you haven't already, leave us a rating or a review. We love the feedback and really appreciate it. Please scroll back. And if there are any previous episodes you might have missed, please go ahead and give those a listen when you can. And thanks again. And we'll look forward to having everybody join us next time again on Mental Selling. Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening. And I really hope you've enjoyed this episode of Mental Selling. Please make sure that you're subscribed. And as always, leave us a comment or a rating. Share it with your networks. You'll get more content like this on our website at integritysolutions.com. Until next time, I'm Will Milano with Integrity Solutions. Thanks very much again for being with us.